Y'all better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasion.
Guys, I've been listening to y'all since this show aired.
When I turn on the Morning Rush, I want to hear Ty at his best every single day.
There are people that have saved up all year and done whatever it took just to get a ticket, just to get a glimpse at the Razorback.
Ty, fortunately, has saved the world and not yet procreated.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
But you've been doing this a long time, man, and I know that you've seen the reaction of fans over the years, and people were just freaking out after Friday because the offense apparently got torched during the scrimmage. This is going to mean more coming from you, but how often have you seen this over the years where one unit wins the battle and just the fan base overreacts during a scrimmage heading up into fall?
Yeah, for this part of camp, if your offense is just ripping through the defense, then you probably got a bad team. If there is a sign that you're making progress, it is that the defense is dominating in camp, early camp. It's much harder to put an offense together. The hardest thing to do is get an offensive line, five guys playing in sync, meshing, able to pick up everybody that the defense sends, any combination of blitzes. That is extremely difficult to do. Meanwhile, the defense has all the advantages early in camp. The thing that was disconcerting to me was that in the first scrimmage that the offense just rolled through them like they were, like butter with a hot knife. That's a bad sign. I think part of it was bad tackling, which that's the first time they'd tackle with no spring practice. That might explain a little bit. But I actually was encouraged that the defense raised up. And apparently the defense has been consistently the best in camp. The offensive line has got probably three positions that I say they know what they're doing. They pretty much know this guy's going to be the starter. It's Cunningham at left tackle, Stromberg at center, Limmer at right guard, right tackle. They're still trying to figure out is it Latham, is it Wagner, or is it Gatlin? And I think it will probably be Wagner, and it might free up Latham to play a little bit at left guard. They can try that. Latham is one of the nastiest, most physical players on the team. Still learning all the nuances of the offense. He's a younger player. It's not concerning to me. I expect them to say defense dominates, and if they don't say that, then you got real problems. Same thing happened at Georgia. Their defense just crushed the offense. Now, that's a really good defense. We know that. Mm-hmm. But that's what you expect to hear out of camp normally with a team that's going to progress to be competitive, that the defense is ahead and that you've got some guys over there.
Yeah, and you mentioned Georgia, Clay. I was probably reading different journalists down there like you were, just kind of reacting to the scrimmage, and it seemed like the defense really handily won that.
We talked,
Sam Pittman was asked about this, and and it's not just Arkansas fans, but media members were just kind of wondering, hey, what's going on with the offense? What's going on with the offense? Here was Sam Pittman on him not really being concerned after the second scrimmage.
I've been around a long time, and you'd probably be more concerned if one side won a scrimmage every single time. A lot of times it's like in life, people pat you on the back and you get complacent. And I'm not saying that we did that on offense, but certainly we weren't the same offense that we were a week ago, nor was the defense the same a week ago. So obviously anytime you improve, you have to feel good about one side. And then is there concern about us holding on to the ball? Absolutely.
Now, Clay, we heard from Kendall Briles last week, and he talked about one of the main concerns, one of the main priorities that he's placed with his offense, with his quarterback, is not turning the ball over. Now, there were at least three interceptions thrown in this scrimmage, and I know that we can't 100% be, oh my gosh, this can't happen, blah, blah, blah. But with the offensive side of things, Clay, is it concerning that the turnovers were a problem? Not just the offense didn't excel, but it was more of just them turning the ball over. Is that a concern, or I'm making too much out of that?
No, I mean, I think that you can't play winning football with turnovers, but I think what you do is that you coach them up, gives an opportunity to coach. You know, it wasn't just interception. They, you know, some of their best players lost the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Traylon Smith lost it. You know, he made a 40-yard run and fumbled at the end of the 40-yard run. Got to have the ball close to your chest. Got to have it locked down. And if you don't, then you don't play. And that's what they're figuring out. And they it's typical stuff in camp. You coach it. You know, no matter which quarterback it was, I will guarantee you part of it was pressure.
Sure.
Part of it was wide receivers not in the right place. You're running a new offense that you didn't get to practice in the spring. And there are going to be some issues. And they're going to, you know, they still have, you know, basically 2.5 weeks before the first game. And if you're still having these problems when you play games, when you play Georgia, then you're going to be in trouble. Cannot win in football with turnovers. It is death. It is the worst thing that can happen. But it's not the first time that's happened in a scrimmage. It's not going to be the last time. They'll have turnovers leading up, and you know it's like. Sometimes it wasn't first-teamers. So you have to kind of go back and chart it all, and we're not getting all that information. We're not getting to watch it all. I'm very encouraged by the things I'm hearing out of camp, and I'll go through some of those a little bit later when that's appropriate. But it's, the idea that the defense kicked their butt is a good thing.
Yeah.
By my accounts. Defense has not raised up very much in the last few years.
Yeah, and, coaches can make these come out kind of the way they need to make them come out based on personnel on the field. But you mentioned just how much pressure is applied. If a defense isn't blitzing and isn't pressuring, that's going to be a day one by the offense. If a defense is doing a lot of blitzing and bringing a lot of pressure and putting the quarterback in a lot of hot situations, well, that's generally going to be a day one by the defense at this point in camp. At this point in camp, I think, is the key words you said earlier.
Yeah, it's and I don't know how much blitzing there was, but it's by and large they're changing fronts. They're rolling in and out of 3- and 4-man front. Sometimes it's a 5-man front based on the formation on offense, but they've mixed and matched it on defense. And like what I hear, Barry Odom is got him rolling. There's just some things about this team that I like chemistry wise that I'm hearing, and this was a disjointed team in the last few years, and it's coming together, and we'll talk about that some more later.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
Oh, he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
And it seems like, from kind of the conversations you've had with us, that team chemistry is really going to be a stronghold of this team in 2020.
Yeah, so the last few years, it was clear to me the offense and the defense, and it starts with the staffs. No communication. When the team met for training kit table or whatever, offense and defense, they didn't talk to each other. And if they did, it was challenging type stuff. Offensive and defensive coaches didn't have any communication. They were on one side of the building, others on the other side of the building. That's not good for team chemistry. This team is just the opposite. The when they eat, they're all mixed together. They enjoy each other. They enjoy practice against each other, but it's not confrontational. It is strictly football. There's stuff that happens on the field. It's left on the field. It doesn't spill over to bad blood in the training room or the locker room or whatever. And it's just, I think Sam Pittman knew what he needed to do to get this team on the same page, you know, as far as chemistry. And I think he is slowly, even with COVID, did things that would make you think that he knew what he was doing as far as pulling the team together so they could play as one. You have to have that. You know, you got to be pulling for each other. You got to be celebrating when one side does well. And I didn't see that last year. And I think that will be a major, major breakthrough for this team going forward.
That's got to be. If this team needs to get back on track and if this team is going to have success, you have to get back to that point. So apparently Chuck Barrett is meeting down in Clarksville, Arkansas, holding of the Panthers with the Lions Club. And one of the guys that's really excited to talk to Chuck today is Mr. Eddie in Clarksville. Now, Eddie texts.
I bet he is.
He texted me over the weekend, excited as we're getting closer, less than 3 weeks out from the Arkansas Razorback football season, 18 days out from today. Eddie, how excited are you for Arkansas football in 2020?
That's exactly right, gentlemen. And thank you for taking my call this morning. It don't take much from Eddie from Clarksville to be punk. And that's what this football program needs when we face one of the best teams in the country that comes to Hometown USA come September 26th at 3 p.m. And I signify that by saying, can you hear the bell ringing? Because that bell's going to be ringing, gentlemen. And on that measuring stick, you cannot have turnovers and win this football program, win this football game. And for the last couple of years, I don't care if you play high school, I don't care if you play college, I don't care if you play NFL, when you look at the stats, you cannot have turnovers, you cannot have missed blocks, you cannot have missed tackles and win football games. And so I'm calling in this morning to address this football program. Coach Pittman, you're the new conductor of this whole thing. And I'm asking you, sir, do you hear the bell ringing? Are you going to be ready? I'm asking these players, do you hear the bell ringing? Because that bell in 18 days is going to be ringing. I'm asking these players, are you going to be ready? I'm asking the fan base, are you going to be ready? Because I don't know how many that all out of the stadium, but I tell you this, you come hungry because we got one of the best football programs in the country. What an opportunity. I look at everything in life as an opportunity. And we're going to have an opportunity, gentlemen, and where are you going to be at on that measuring stick? Because that rumble is fixing to begin September 18th. And it's Kim Moon and Clarksville, and Castle Steakhouse. I'm going to be one of the most iconic voices in all of college sports, Mr. Chuck Barrett. And we're going to be ringing that bell. So, listen to the bell, gentlemen, because the countdown, as they say, is on. So I will leave you with this, gentlemen. Let's get ready to rumble. I'm ready. You get ready. Thank you for taking my call.
Appreciate it as always, Eddie.
Eddie may owe Michael Buffer some money there. Let's get ready to rumble.
Got everyone excited, man. Yeah. 18 days out from Arkansas football.
I bet he took vacation time if he had to go hear Chuck speak at the Lions Club.
I think that's right, and I do think he's a little loose with his words. To call Chuck iconic is a little much. I have a feeling Chuck's listening right now. Chuck, you're not iconic.
He probably is in Johnson County, though. His home county.
He's there.
He's like royalty there. He's from Clarksville. That's like, there's name a more famous person from Clarksville, Arkansas than Chuck.
Oh, Marty Barry. Houston. Marty Houston.
I'm not saying the people in Clarksville don't think he's iconic. I'm just saying that he's not.
Yeah.
I'm not. I don't live in Clarksville. I've sat across from him, and iconic is not what I called him when I got through with the show. I called him something else.
Yeah. I said something you can say on air now.
Well, it was arrogance. Yeah, I mean, I was like, that's a little bit much, Chuck, you know. And, I mean, when he would wad up his notes and throw them at me, that didn't seem like he was iconic then. So
I seem to remember another radio host doing that every once in a while. So I guess it comes. Maybe I'll start doing that. I'll start throwing my notes at you, Tommy, when I feel like I have enough clout to do that. Yeah. How long is that going to take?
That won't happen.
It'll happen once.
So. It won't happen again. Clay, Eddie's excited. A lot of us are excited. You're talking about the chemistry aspect. The other thing, we've talked about this. Like, in order for Arkansas to get back on track, you got to have some Jimmys and the Joes. You got to have some dudes. Now, they got a couple dudes on campus, but it's not. They have to continue to bring those guys in. Now, we talked about Keetron Jackson committing to the Razorbacks. You have a couple other guys that you're excited about in this 2021 class. But the players on campus, the guys, the Burks, the Knoxes, the Franks, the defensive stalwarts that they have, who are some guys, six or seven or eight of guys that are really standing out to you, whether it's in practice, scrimmaging, or just what you've been hearing about them in the locker room overall?
Yeah, this is who I would say. You know, I was talking with somebody last night. I said, let's say who are the best six players on the team, best five players, and we ended up getting to eight, and these are the guys that I think are, you know, they're SEC ready, SEC type players, and there may be more, but these are the ones that have really showed themselves in the first, you know, this summer camp. You know, it's not hard to figure out most of them. I might surprise you with a couple. Rakeem Boyd, Treylon Burks, Julius Coates, defensive end.
Mm-hmm. All 6'7" of them. Good grief.
Felipe Franks, another 6'7" guy. Dorian Gerald. Jalen Callan. Now, that name might surprise you a little bit, but I think he's a dude. And I think he's a little bit like the honey badger. He's going to be around the ball. He's going to impact the game. When you get through his name, he's going to have stats. He's going to have fumble recoveries. He's going to have an interception. He's going to have tackles. He's going to have broken up passes. He's going to be around the ball like the honey badger, Tyrone Mathieu. Treylon Smith, the Arizona State transfer, running back. I think he'll play at the same time with Boyd on occasion. He's going to be in the slot. He's going to be a tailback. He's going to, you know, they'll have two backs in there in the backfield at some times. They're going to do things to get Treylon Smith on the field just because of his speed, his ability. And, you know, then there's some guys that are on the verge of being that. I'd say Trey Knox, Mike Woods, they're right on the verge of being in that group of eight. I think Xavier Kelly, defensive tackle. I think Jonathan Marshall. I think these are guys that can play in the SEC. You know, the thing about it is I didn't list linebackers. I didn't list offensive linemen. There might be, you know, Ricky Stromberg might be close to being in that list, but he hasn't played center yet. But I think he's that type of, you know, that type of talent. Myron Cunningham, you know, when I can throw those two guys in that same group of eight, you know, we've got a group of 10, and then we can, you know, we throw in a linebacker or two. Well, then I think then you're talking about a team that's going to win some games.
All right, so to go back, I want to make sure to distinguish who you had on that eight, because you listed a lot of names there. You had Burks, Boyd, and Franks on offense, right?
Yep.
And then on defense, Dorian Gerald, Coates, and who was the other one I'm missing here?
Jalen Catalan.
Catalan, yeah. Is there anybody else on that list that I'll make sure I just distinguish? I think I
gave you seven, and then I've got about three or four that are right on the edge. You know, maybe Myron Cunningham would be the eight.
Yeah. And Smith. I do think it's interesting, though, that you don't have an offensive lineman, but you get
said Myron Cunningham, yeah.
Well, on the edge. But, you know, you do have a pair of defensive linemen on there, and I think that's an area of this team that maybe could be a surprise area for a lot of fans. I just don't think the expectations by a lot of people listening this morning, Clay, is real high for the defense. I don't think they're expecting much from the defense. I think there's a pair of guys up front. You mentioned two of them there with Dorian Gerald and Coates that really could be difference makers this year for this team.
Yeah, and defensive end is the position that impacts the game. I mean, can you get to the quarterback? And, you know, it's Oh, this was, what, 7 or 8 years ago, and I was sitting with Petrino. I think it might have been the first sit-down that I had with him. So that would have been, oh, maybe 8, 9 years ago. And he said, the key in football, it's as simple as this. And I've thrown this to a few coaches, and they've always said, yeah, that's nailing it down. The issue that you have is that on defense, you want to hit the quarterback. On offense, you want to keep the quarterback from getting hit. He says it's as simple as that. If you do those two things, if your defense hits the quarterback, if you harass him, you disrupt things by being in his face, knocking him down, tipping passes, if you're doing that, you're going to be successful on defense. And on offense, if you keep your quarterback clean, you keep him upright, you're going to move the ball, you're going to be able to throw it, you're going to avoid turnovers. I mean, it's as simple as that. I'll guarantee you the turnovers that they had were all related to the quarterback getting hit. And, I mean, maybe they're not tackling him in a scrimmage, but they're getting there and they're disrupting things. And, you know, it's the offensive line holding up so the quarterback can do his thing.
It is a Toyota Tuesday. Be sure to check out the full lineup of 2020 Toyotas, including the Camry, the Corolla, the Prius, the Avalon, or the spacious crossover RAV4, and do it here in Arkansas at your local Toyota dealer. Toyota, let's go places. Tommy, you were talking about watching college football over the weekend. Did you happen to see SMU's game by chance?
I watched part of that game, yes.
Did you see the what they were doing on the sideline by chance?
Well, what specifically do you mean?
With the defense?
They popped the cork.
Yeah. They did, yeah. Club takeaway made headlines for SMU over the weekend.
15-yard penalty be assessed from the spot of the foul. SMU football.
Got the poppers, the confetti. Where are the balloons? We need balloons.
Oh, man. You know what? I thought we learned our lesson when it comes to anything club-related on the sidelines. So what I'm referring to is SMU, anytime they force a turnover or get a takeaway, they now are reenacting club takeaway on the sidelines. And Pat McAfee was actually in the middle of all this, the ESPN sideline reporter, and got in and popped a bottle of what looked to be champagne. I don't think there was anything in it. I think it was just uncorked already and had all the stuff out. But it was quite entertaining. So I'm wondering, how long is this going to last? Because let's go back to last season when we heard from Nick Starkle and C.J. O'Grady about Club Dub.
And now you're heading back to what used to be your locker room, but is now completely transformed into what?
Club Dub, baby.
Club Dub, okay.
Club Dub.
What is this? What is Club Dub? There are guys in there just cutting off tape and acting
like
a
little heck no. So first thing you see, you walk around the corner, and we have one of our assistants, and he's fully dressed in a suit, opened up at the top, sunglasses on.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a list, and your name has to be on the list to get into Club Dub.
So the jersey's not enough?
Oh, jersey's not enough. You got to be on that list.
Clay, when are we going to learn, man? I mean, when are we going to learn that the extracurricular stuff isn't always going to help?
I think that would have been fine last year. They just they didn't have any players that were on the list. They shouldn't have let anybody in. It's like, nope, you boys aren't in yet. Yeah. So we're not beating Colorado State and letting you in Club Dub. We'll have to beat somebody else.
Got to earn it. Yeah,
got to be an SEC victory before we go into Club Dub. Right. Y'all aren't on the list. Sorry.
Yeah.
Like, I've never been on the list. I've never gotten in any club. So there we go.
Yeah.
It's this reenactment.
When I saw it on TV and saw the confetti, I was like, boys, this is not a good look.
No.
It is not. First of all, none of those guys have ever ordered champagne. None of them. They would know what champagne was if it hit them in the face. You know, somebody launched a ship and they threw a bottle across. So what was that? Mm. I said, no, that's champagne, boys. No, we don't know anything about champagne.
Yeah.
Yep.
Man.
Yeah,
I figure you'd be more apt to say something. You're kind of quiet on this.
Well,
you were making fun of all this last year.
I just think this is a year you don't need any of these celebrations. I mean, you just need to be glad you're playing, right? So, I mean, I just think all of this stuff is stupid. All of it. The turnover chain, the turnover trash can, club dub.
The belts.
All of it is stupid.
Yep.
I mean, you're celebrating doing your job. I just think all of it is stupid. But it's part of recruiting anymore. I get it. Yeah. You know,
everything that's happening to get to football season, we don't really need this.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
And SMU's a quality
you're tipped
football
in fate
team.
Here by doing this stuff, right? You're messing with karma a little bit, right?
Yeah, and I don't get the D's on the helmet and the Dallas on their shirts. It's like, what?
You weren't a fan of that uniform?
No. Well, I'm not a fan. They're not Dallas University. No. They're not. That's a really far reach. They are an elite private university in the heart of Dallas. That's as far as I'll take it. They are not. The people in Dallas, they're just kind of like, oh, yeah, they got a D on their helmet, but they're not my team.
Well, we always talked about, Clay, Tommy and I always discussed this, that Chad Morris coming over from SMU was, what, the 10th most talked about sports program inside that city? Maybe 15?
Oh, SMU?
I mean,
yeah.
You think about high schools, you think about colleges, you think about all that. I mean, that was a bunch of stuff when it came to, he was behind the pecking order when it came to that. So that's, I just thought that was funny. I figured you lambasted a little more. You love doing that with Club Dub. You love making fun of Club Dub. I figured you'd be all over this.
SMU's not my team. Yes, SMU, but all of this is stupid. I mean, I don't like, I just say particularly in this year, knowing what you've gone through to play. I'll say, knowing all the hurdles you've had to clear to even get to this point, just go play football. I mean, and why are you doing it? I mean, there's no one really behind you. I mean, there's no fans in the stands. Just go play.
Yeah.
Just play.
That's how you got to do it. All right, 877-377-6963. Stanley and Glenwood, we got about a minute, man, talking about this upcoming season. You go ahead.
Yeah, I got one question, and maybe you can help me figure it out. Let's just say, and this could happen, let's just say it's 2 days before the kickoff of the Georgia game, and our top four quarterbacks come down with COVID. Mm-hmm. What happens?
You got big problems. And that's going to happen at some point this year is my guess.
They've got more than four. The number five guy will play. That's what will happen.
Yeah. I mean, let's say it's five. I mean, is there a cutoff point where the game isn't played?
Yeah, I don't know about that. Nobody has said.
Thanks for the call, Stanley.
I think they're cross-training guys. I mean, it's like, five, six quarterbacks. That's what they've got there. I guess Tommy could play quarterback. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I'm guessing if Tennessee had the situation like they had this week with 44 players out, probably not playing a game with 44 players.
Yeah, and I think that's what we've got is they have planned for postponements. That's what the open date in week five is for Arkansas. Everybody has an open date either week five or week six.
Yeah.
And everybody has an open date week 13.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an open date before the SEC championship game. So you've got two possible makeup dates, and that was done. And that's why they're playing a 10-game season and not, everybody thought, well, why aren't they playing Nevada, and why aren't they playing Notre Dame? Well, actually, those teams would have played Arkansas, but the SEC decided the best thing for them to crown a champion is to have open dates. So you've already got one. TCU's got an open, they're postponing their game, right? Mm-hmm. They're not playing this coming week because of COVID, and they're already working. I think it's SMU, and they're working to find another date to play that game. They will not play it if they have multiple postponements inside of their Big 12 conference because they'll use that. So if they have an opening at the end of the season that they didn't have to use because of a conference postponement, they'll play SMU.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a light and flavorful beer for those easy drinking occasions.
The crowd's into it. They just threw him out of the game. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
We were talking about best barbecue joints outside of the state of Arkansas, and I had the pleasure of going to Memphis this week, or right outside of Memphis this weekend, and passed through, and we did stop at a really good spot there called Interstate Barbecue, Jim Neely's Interstate. I've had Central, I've had Rendezvous, I've had Commissary, Memphis Barbecue Company, some others, and I wanted to try one that I hadn't had, and so we went there, and what they're known for is barbecue spaghetti.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had barbecue spaghetti?
I've had it at Neely's. Yeah.
Oh, you've actually had it.
Yep.
Then I didn't know that. I didn't know that you'd had it before.
Yep. They've got a couple locations, but they also have one in the Memphis airport, full-blown restaurant inside the Memphis airport. So I had that there because that was their special one day, and it was a unique deal. I like spaghetti. I like barbecue. All right, let's put these two things together and see how it goes.
So with the food combinations, and I really enjoyed it as well, I was thinking to myself, what are some unique food combinations that you, as a listener, or just someone that, it might kind of sound weird at first, but it actually is really good. If you want to hop in on this, it's 877-377-6963. So what is a unique food combination that you've had in the past or continuously like that you think is a little odd, but it's still really good?
Yeah, well, the first thing that came to mind when I read this last night was we got to bring up the grape jelly on the sausage biscuits, because that was about a 50-50 deal. People thought that was okay, and some thought it was a requirement to have a sausage biscuit at Hardee's. Some thought it was really weird to put grape jelly on a sausage biscuit. So I'd go with that one, number one. I don't know if this is really a weird combination, because you'd have these two things together, but I like to combine them. And that's if I'm making a ham sandwich, a turkey, just a regular old sandwich, right?
Mm-hmm.
I like to take my Doritos and put them in the sandwich.
I did that as a kid.
I still like to
do
that.
You still do that.
And now my kids are on that plan, too, because I like the little crunch in there.
That's a really good combination.
So I don't know that that's a weird combination, because it wouldn't be abnormal or weird if you had Doritos or chips, whatever chips you like,
mm-hmm.
laying next to your sandwich on your plate, so... Anyway,
I'd say that's a pretty good one. Jenkins, do you have one? I know you ate some good food over the weekend. What is your unique food combo?
Oh, I don't guess I've had any like weird combinations before. I know when I was a kid, I
tell me you've never had a weird food combination.
No, because every food I eat is fantastic.
Yeah,
but it's not. But, you don't have a single.
Well, I mean, that doesn't make it. All these weird combinations
are good.
Are good, yeah.
But
I'll cross pollinate some processes like smoked hamburgers. You know, generally you don't smoke ground meat hamburgers, you know, but boy, they're good when you do.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I did the ketchup and steak thing.
Oh, but you outgrew that, right?
Yeah, I agree. But probably weird. I don't know. We have this weird, like you talk about the ham sandwich. I had this weird, like this steak seasoning, and it's real salty and it's got a little garlicky taste to it. And I'll always put it on my ham and cheese sandwiches. Just to give it a little bit of them.
That's a good one.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of text in here. Chad says, barbecue sauce and ranch on hot dogs.
No. I like barbecue sauce, not ranch. And I love ranch.
Not together.
Not,
yeah.
not on my hot dogs.
Like both.
Text in the 405 says, biscuit and chocolate gravy.
Peanut butter and Miracle Whip sandwich. Not mayonnaise, but Miracle Whip.
Ugh.
Now that one, I don't know if I can get with that one.
I've had spaghetti tacos before, Eric and Hot Springs. They're fantastic. I really do enjoy spaghetti tacos.
Never had
done
that
the right way. Dwight Fort Smith says, I haven't had this before, but he saw Willie Robertson from Duck Dynasty smoked lobster mac and cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Now I've seen that on menus, but I'm not a mac and cheese fan. Is that good?
That's really good. I've had that.
Okay. So, I can't think of the last time I've had lobster, to be honest. It's been at least 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while. Craig in Fayetteville says his dad puts honey on tamales. That's interesting.
Never tried that.
I don't think I've had that before.
But what would honey not make better?
That's good. I put occasionally honey on my pizza. There's a place in Little Rock that's really famous for. Yeah. It's really good. I also like dipping my fries in a shake every once in a while if I get a milkshake.
That's the one thing I've never understood. Milkshakes and pizza.
Well,
and fries.
You know, sweet and salty go together. I've never done fries and milkshake, but I mean, it's pretty common.
We're getting a bunch of texts in there. There's more. And if you want to chime in, it's 877-377-6963. What about peanut butter cheeseburgers? You ever had one of those? You mentioned sweet and saltiness. That's another example.
That's one of those things you'd see like on Triple D or one of these food cooking shows, Food Network, mm-hmm. Cooking Channel. Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a Guy Fieri type of deal there.
Spaghetti and catfish, that's something.
That is like a South Arkansas mm-hmm. delicacy down in the Delta.
Yeah. That's something that stands out. I know there's a couple places in Taney Town up there in Northwest Arkansas that they're famous for spaghetti and fried chicken.
Right.
Which is also
the
fantastic.
The Venetian Inn. Yeah.
Those are, and used to be, I don't know if Mary Meister's still around, but No, those two places still stand. They stand out as that combination that I had never had until I got to school up there. And then I had them. I was like, why have I never had this before in my life?
Yeah, the old Venetian Inn out on 412. Fried chicken and or steak and spaghetti. Either one. So.
Did you say Pilot Mike's, the pimento cheese and pulled pork sandwich? Did we say that one yet?
I don't think we've said that one yet.
My dad loves him some pimento cheese. I've never had pimento cheese or never liked pimento cheese, but I think my dad would be able to do that. Chris in Poto texts and he says, grilled cheese with pickles and ketchup.
All right. I like that. Yeah.
I'd get down with that. You'd get down with that?
Yep.
Okay. Brad from Mountain Home says, macaroni and cheese with tuna in it.
Nope. Out on that.
Sean from Greenwood says, biscuits with peanut butter and syrup.
Yes.
In on that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I
would probably take that. 479 says ranch on a hot dog is also known as homegrown terrorism. Good Lord, that sounds bad. Yeah,
How about mayonnaise on a hot dog?
My dad even was that
like a really good hot dog?
Was that you, Jenkins?
Really good Italian, or you know,
someone got on this station and said they like mayonnaise on their hot dog.
I've had mayonnaise on a hot dog.
Yeah, I've done that.
Miracle Whip.
Like a really good, like all beef hot dog you've had out on the grill for.
I think my dad is the biggest mayonnaise advocate out there, but he is not a fan of mayonnaise on a hot dog. And I'm the biggest.
And generally, if you're going to do mayonnaise with a hot dog, you got to do relish too.
Okay. I love ranch more than most sauce combinations, but ranch on a hot dog does not sound good at all.
Not ranch.
Yeah. I don't know if I can get on board with that. Josh in Greenwood says cow tongue tacos. I think it's lingua. You've never had lingua tacos?
I think
that's what it's called.
Nope.
They're actually pretty good. So it's kind of like the Rocky Mountain oysters.
It's a delicacy.
Yeah. Like some things, if you don't know the actual origin or what the meat actually is and you just eat it, you think it's actually good, but then when you get told what it is, you're like, oh no, I gotta be standoffish because it's not what I'm used to eating. Like, that's a difference.
Like every kid in America.
Yeah. Right. Text at the 870, Northeast Arkansas, Bologna and Miracle Whip.
Bologna.
With a bologna. What did I say?
Oh, almighty. Bologna.
Oh, yeah, bologna.
Where are you from?
Sorry, I was a quick read. Bologna and Miracle Whip sandwich with cold fried chicken. Interesting.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever had
I like that, all that, so it can't be bad.
So... Chad agrees with the mayo and barbecue sauce on a hot dog assertion.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can get on board. Here's
barbecue sauce better than the ranch.
Here's an interesting one. This comes from CG. Homemade vanilla ice cream with plain Lay's potato chips.
Salty and sweet. Tell you, salty and sweet go together.
That combination.
Yeah.
This is an interesting text out of 479. I've had a couple of crawfish boils in my day, but he says that they drop pineapple chunks in their crawfish boils. Is that something you get on board with?
I'm not a experienced crawfish boil guy.
Okay.
I like crawfish, but I couldn't speak to that level on it.
Now, I think I've had this before, and it's pretty good. Jacob texted in out of Oklahoma City. He says, peanuts in your Coke.
Yep.
I've had that before.
I think that's a requirement to be in Arkansas.
Yeah, I think I've done that before.
Particularly if you find the old glass bottle Coca-Cola.
Oh,
that's even better.
Yeah. Have you ever had the boiled spicy peanuts? This is more of a go
away.
There's
a place, like if you go down to Dallas, there's a place, a couple places, when you get in there to North Texas that have it.
Yeah, you're driving in.
Right.
That's one of my dad's favorite delicacies that we don't necessarily get every single day. Another one from Josh in Greenwood says Tabasco and potato chips.
Yep.
This was a favorite of mine back in the day when doing that for sure.
Yeah, I mean... got, a little spicy, a little sweet, a little savory, a little salty. Yeah.
Pilot Mike says sweet potatoes in a crawfish bowl. I don't think I've done that either.
That'd be good.
So I've done like sausage. We've done mushrooms. Onions are pretty, that's pretty obvious what you do and stuff. But I don't know if I've done that.
I did some sweet potatoes this weekend, but it did not have that combination. So
This is something that I don't know if you'd like or not. Greg and Van Buren says he likes to mix the blue cheese and the ranch dressing and eat it on the wings. Would you do that? Have you ever done that? Blue cheese and ranch together?
A little bit, but no, not intentionally. I mean, you get both there and they kind of have a little interplate fusion or something, when they just slide in there together, but no, not really.
Bill in Fayetteville, Texas says rice, eggs, mushrooms, and picante sauce all mixed together. I'd say that's a pretty good combo. So.
Sounds kind of like fried rice with mushrooms.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Without the whatever. So he says
with picante.
They also said they put green beans in the crawfish boil. I've never done that. Have you ever done that?
There's a lot of weird stuff going in the crawfish here.
Yeah, I'm typically, my crawfish boils over the years have been sausage, onions, the seasoning, crawfish, obviously.
Corn,
potatoes, maybe red mushrooms.
Yeah.
I've never done sweet potatoes, which I thought was unique. So, and some good stuff this morning as we got some. And let me tell you, I had some heartburn over the weekend. We ordered the spaghetti, the barbecue spaghetti we were talking about. There was one occasion where me and my buddy ordered 50 wings, and we split that with a large fry. I did not hold back from eating this weekend. I'll tell you that. I needed some, honestly. Okra and fried tater.
That's not even a weird. That's like how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Okra and fried potatoes go together. That's like peas and carrots.
Eric in Hot Springs says smoked meatloaf wrapped in bacon.
I've done that. I've made that before.
What about Adam in Panama City, Florida? Salt, pepper in his beer? You ever put salt or pepper?
Put salt on
Coronas?
Well, you put, that, but put salt on the napkin and then it doesn't stick, number one.
Mm-hmm.
But I put salt on the lip or the can of beer.
Okay. This is a text out of the 479. This is a coworker of his back in high school would bring a container of cottage cheese and use it to dip cheese puffs or Crispitos. That coworker sounds like my father. Now, he stopped eating cheese, so he doesn't eat cottage cheese anymore. But I swear, Tommy, my dad would have 3 containers of cottage cheese in his fridge every single week.
Cottage cheese is good,
He likes his cottage cheese, man. Yeah. He just doesn't do it anymore because he's not eating cheese.
All right. A few more, or you want to move on?
Spam and pineapple heat in the microwave. That's what Bill in Fayetteville says.
Yeah.
M&M's in your popcorn.
M&M's all right. Yeah.
That's a good one.
So
we got through like 30 of them, 30 or 40 real quick. So good combinations. They're kind of odd and unique, but taste good nevertheless.
All right. Maybe we'll come back to this again, get some of Clay's weird combinations before we get done this morning. Hey, speaking of food, brought to you by Art's Barbecue and Burgers, making everything safe, making everything easy and convenient for you right now. Their drive-up window, 452-2550. They're back in action today, Tuesday through Saturdays at Art's. You can get one of their great burgers, their great smoked brisket, their baby back ribs, any of their great menu, or if you're trying to kind of get back on the program, one of their great salads are always the right call. Because they can put their smoked chicken, any of their smoked turkey, their smoked ham. That's why I love their chef salad, because all the meats that they put in the chef salad are house smoked right there at Art's. 452-2550. The waiter app can bring it to you, or call ahead for curbside pickup as well. It's all at Art's Barbecue and Burgers, one of our favorite joints, right next to Aaron's on Rogers Avenue in Fort Smith.
Football coaches across the country are preparing for a player or two to be out this upcoming weeks. Like 2 weeks is what you have to sit out for the coronavirus protocol, and that could lead to a variety of different scenarios for this college football season. You're going to see so many unique factors play into this year, whether it's voting for different awards, whether it's different rankings that you'll see come out. Everything has to be factored in differently because of the coronavirus effect that's going on. And so I'm wondering, with all this happening, Sam Pittman and his staff have mentioned multiple times they're cross-training. And I'm guessing, Tommy, that there's more of a... Like, it's not like this hasn't been done in the past, but there's definitely got to be more of a heavy emphasis on this, right? Because of what's happening right now in the world.
Yeah, and I think really developing depth, giving probably more snaps in these practice settings and camp environments than maybe you've done before with particularly threes and even fours at a position. You talk about cross-training. When I hear that, I think more about offensive line and guys learning to be a center guard or tackle, or at least two of those three. You got to have somebody to snap the ball. And I think you cross-train guys that can snap the ball in case you have not only injury, but like you said, someone doesn't clear protocol a day or two before the game, and now what do we do? So when I hear cross-training, I immediately, my thoughts go to offensive line and trying to figure out how you can mix and match parts there when the need arises.
We were talking about earlier the scrimmage that occurred, how the defense really handily beat the offense, at least 3 interceptions thrown, 1 fumble. Now, Sam Pittman wouldn't comment on who threw the picks. You hope it wasn't Felipe Franks in accordance with this upcoming season. You hope it wasn't that. But I just think about the different wide receivers, the different defensive players, the offensive linemen and stuff, them kind of get ready for this season, Tommy. And it's almost like more is being added to your plate. A lot of times you got to know your position, then maybe a position next year too. Mm-hmm. But now what I would assume that these guys are really having to try to keep in track as much as possible. And how much is that going to be affected with them not having spring ball, with the stuff being condensed and stuff? I mean, this is going to be a really interesting year across the board in college football, and your hope that these guys continue to stay diligent as far as social distancing and stuff goes. For example, Tennessee had to cancel practice because they had like 44 players mm-hmm. that were quarantined, if I remember that statistic correctly. Luckily, Arkansas to this point has not, they haven't had to cancel their football team-wise.
No, and Tennessee kind of handled that weird. They said they had 8 or 9 with COVID, but 44 players were unavailable. So, I mean, those two clearly go together, and clearly the other 35 or whatever players were in contact with those 8 or 9. So, obviously, it's hard to hold any kind of team activity with 44 players mm-hmm. missing.
And I'm going to the University of Arkansas coronavirus dashboard right now, and the current total active cases right now at the U of A is 923. Now, that seems pretty substantial, and it is, but relative to other SEC schools, that number is not as much as some of the other SEC schools, which I guess is a positive. I don't know.
I think you're looking for the silver lining here. There's no positive around 1,000 cases.
Or there's multiple positives around 1,000 cases.
Well, tell
Zing.
Well, funny guy here.
Now, trying to get some,
again, this is
bring
the biggest,
some light this morning.
This is the reason they pushed the season back to September 26th and to see how campuses would respond. You know, are students going to follow protocols? Are they going to wear the mask? Now they've put in an order, a moratorium, or whatever you want to say. They've made it against the rules to have any gatherings of more than 10. No functions, no events other than class and athletics can occur on the campus. Now, doesn't mean you can't have it outside of campus. I would think if you went that route as one of the campus organizations, there would be a pretty stiff penalty or something would come down from
the hammer
would come down from administration on this. They got to get a handle on this. This is why you move the season back to September 26th to see if things like this were going to happen. I still think it's the biggest threat to the college football season is positive cases on campus and the students not following all the protocols and letting these numbers get out of control.
Yeah, it's like I described it a couple weeks ago. You're putting the fate of college football in the hand of a bunch of what, Tommy?
Bunch of 18 to 24 year olds,
and otherwise that's where known as drunks.
That's where you're also seeing, the biggest number of cases. 80% plus in most days are in that age group in these counties. You know, they're not specifically saying it's the U of A students, but it's pretty easy to put together 18 to 24 year olds in a college town. Where do you think it's coming from?
And you think about, listen, some football players are acting, and I say some, many of the football players, not only on Arkansas's campus, but across the college football landscape that's still playing, they're acting accordingly. They're trying their best to follow the protocols because they want to play this season. Now, there are some that have been hypocritical. I pointed out John Rhys Plumlee, starting Ole Miss quarterback, was talking about social distancing. They put out a video, and many students commented, it's like, dude, you were out the other night. Like, you were out of the bar the other night. So it's hard sometimes because these guys, these young student athletes, particularly the mm-hmm. football players, are so visible and stuff. And so they are even held to a higher standard of all of this. But a lot of these guys have really been kind of following the guidelines, following the protocol because they want to play this season. And they see these students around them across campus, up in Fayetteville, Gainesville, Tuscaloosa, and whatever, that are not following these guidelines whatsoever. And so while they're following what they need to do to have a college football season, a lot of these students who also want a college football season aren't doing what's necessary in order for that to happen.
It's just like we all were at 21 or 20 or whatever. We think we're bulletproof. It won't happen to us. Somebody else will get the COVID. I won't get it because I'm like, you know, a superhuman, super genetic human. Somehow I'm going to avoid it with my outstanding
metabolism
and my immune system and all the, yeah, exactly.
Sex appeal.
I don't know if this will ultimately be the reason. Question is, will these schools pull the plug on students on campus or the football season? And I'm leaning towards they're just going to shut down campus, you know, students on campus for a few weeks if it comes to that. Right now they're trying to work through it, and let's see where you're at in 14 days. Again, the whole reason why the season's starting the September 26th and not, September 6th.
Yeah, it's a difficult time right now for college athletics. And again, with everything going on, so many different things have to be accounted for. And these coaches, again, they've had a shortened offseason with no spring ball, particularly up in Fayetteville. And so they're having to prepare these players this upcoming season for not only the position that they've been used to playing the past year, past couple years up on campus, but other positions that they might be forced to play, not because they're trying to just switch them position-wise, but because of the lack of players that could end up happening. You hope that particularly up in Fayetteville, that these guys stay diligent and continue social distance and stuff. But that's just something that these coaches are having to prepare for. Like, for example, the Tennessee stuff. Like, you could get lucky this season by just another team not doing what they're supposed to.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing we've said is the unknown is Arkansas may get an upset of a ranked team because they've got 10 or 12 or 8 or 9 or whatever number of starters missing that day. And if they're for that team, the wrong 8 or 9, you know, it's your starting offensive line, it's your starting quarterback, it's your defensive line or your linebackers are decimated that day. I mean, are you going to forfeit the game because you're missing 10 or 12 players, or are you going to go ahead and try to play the game with your backups? And I think playing your game with those that cleared protocol in the backups is the move that all of these teams are going to make.
And one of the staples of this program we talk about is you never want to root for injuries in any way, shape, or form. But if a player or two on the opposing team was to contract COVID and they were important, like the different quarterbacks that we've named off before, we know that Jamie Newman's not playing against the Razorbacks because he's opted out. But if a JT Daniels, if a Miles Brennan, if a Kellen Mond, the list goes on, and the SEC quarterbacks you're playing this fall, if they were to contract COVID or whatever, that would obviously be a big factor and a big difference maker at Arkansas's chances to win this upcoming college football season. And that's just pertaining to quarterbacks. That's applicable to a number of different positions that the Razorbacks will face this upcoming season. So Sam Pittman is really, it seems like from the players that you hear from, that he's gotten these guys to buy in, not only from what he's preaching, but just kind of preparing for. You hope that's not only just talking about the football side of things, but the social side of things as well, because we know these two, this particularly in this college football season, go hand in hand.
Yeah, I mean, it's just easier to control 105 versus, you know, trying to, how many are on the campus now? I don't know, it's normally 28,000, but it's probably nowhere near that number this year. But you just can't have your thumb on all this. But Sam Pittman can. And he can put extra team rules, and he can put extra procedures and policies in place. And listen, these guys want to play. They've worked too hard to get to this point. So I think you'll see teams do their very best to do whatever they got to do to play.
Andy in Mountain Home texts in, brings up an important point for all of you that like to gamble on college football. He said all the unknowns is one of the reasons I'm not gambling this year. Andy, I would probably say that's a smart suggestion on your part. Very difficult to figure out things without COVID, and this just adds another wrinkle that it's almost impossible to figure out what's going to happen, not only in college football, but in all sports as well.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade with half the sugar and carbs of Mike's Hard.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time, we're coming for the whole damn thing.
Tom, you've been doing this a long time like our buddy Clay, and we were talking about earlier how people were kind of overreacting to hearing that the defense dominated the second scrimmage. I know ball security has been stressed by Kendall Briles repeatedly. Seems like they didn't have that on Friday, man.
It does seem, and we didn't hear exact names connected to the fumble so much. We are aware of the first drive by the offense. Felipe Franks drove them down inside the 10. Sam Pittman guessed to the 9 and then threw a pick to Simeon Blair. But other than that, we're not sure the quarterbacks or the running backs who fumbled. But I don't know. I guess it's okay to have some balance that the offense did well in the first scrimmage and the defense did this one. So both working with a little confidence and got to hold on to the ball. I mean, you could be a great offense, but if you turn it over, you're not going to score a ton of points.
Tom, one of the things that Arkansas has, I think, kind of, I don't know necessarily working against them, but is it – I'm trying to pay, and I know you're doing this too, trying to pay attention to a bunch of people that are covering Georgia right now, what's going on with their scrimmages and stuff. Do you think Georgia and just teams across college football, do they have a disadvantage compared to years past for the first game, considering the lack of like media coverage and the lack of really we getting to see anything associated with the football in the fall?
Well, I'm not sure exactly Does Georgia have the disadvantage?
I think, I don't know if it's just Georgia, but really any team in college football, like the first game that they play, you're not getting a lot because you haven't heard and you haven't seen just because of Corona and like media not wanting to be there and just the lack of being really coverage we're being able to get.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is a different year than they've ever had. Athletes are used to the camps that they have. I mean, it used to be the two-a-days, but they're used to the camps and the pacing and the structure of a camp where you're getting after it all day, every day, and then a couple of weeks before the season starts, you break camp, and you're still practicing, and your roster completely fills up, and you get ready for the first game. We're not having that this year. So you take a team like Navy. Ken Niumatalolo at least accepted responsibility for the fact. He said, we were tackling dummies and did not have tackle practices, and you saw what happened to them last night against BYU. I mean, that was a jaw-dropper how different those two teams looked. Yeah. So I think before I got here, I think the folks told me, Bob, Nate, those guys, that in 2006, Arkansas went really light on the tackling, and in the opener or whatever game it was against USC, they had a bunch of fumbles.
Mm-hmm.
It may have been 05, but anyway, Felix Jones had several fumbles, and he didn't get tackled all camp. So you got to have some of that.
Yeah, and, you know, I've watched a lot of these games to this point, even at the high school level, Tom, a lot of sloppiness with pre-snap penalties, false starts, offsides and encroachment penalties. I just wonder if Arkansas and the rest of the SEC and the leagues that are starting at the end of September will have some edge on eliminating some of those mistakes just by having more practice hours and more practice time, but also watching games of these other teams and knowing, hey, we need to zero in on these things because there's some commonality, I think, in a lot of these mistakes that are being made in these games we've gotten to watch so far.
No doubt. I mean, and you try to prepare your team every year for every type of thing that could slip up and bite you. But you just can't. I mean, because things crop up in the course of the game. And so as fun as the UCA Austin Peay game was to watch, there was some wild stuff going on that led you to believe, you know, that they had the issues in camp or the deep snappers weren't there because they were both quarantined or whatever.
Yeah.
So, pre-snap penalties, always a big deal. Holding on to the ball, at least Arkansas seen, hey, look, if you're holding the ball, if you're not thinking about holding on to the ball, you get hit, you get the ball raked, you can lose it.
Yeah.
Pay attention to that. So I do think that games like last night, for instance, if you've been in your camp and you're an SEC team and you're playing on September 26th, and you haven't really been tackling, and then you see what happens to Navy and what Ken says after the game, you're like, you know, maybe we should have a scrimmage here.
Yeah.
And so I do think the SEC is in a somewhat advantageous position by starting later and also by letting the students get on camp and having these waves of coronavirus go through as well.
Sure. Let's go back to the scrimmage on Friday. Obviously, the defense seemingly won the day. How much improvement do you think there's been on defense, and how reserved should we be to have any kind of level of hope for a dramatically better defense this season?
Well, pretty reserved because it's just been so many years that it hasn't been a solid defense. I mean, 2014 was a good defense. Since then, there's been a couple of okay ones, but not a dominant defense by any means. And also, as thin as they still look to be sometimes, if we can be happy that, you know, say, Dorian Jarrell and Julius Coates might be SEC caliber ends, but hey, Mateo Soli, Zach Williams, Eric Gregory, those guys have got to produce too. You got to be deep. So they got pressure on the quarterback, so that means the O-line wasn't doing everything it was supposed to do. They got the picks. I think, and I wrote about the safeties on Sunday, coaches think that could be a position of strength, and it would almost be an overnight change for that to happen. But they like what Catalan brings, what Slusher brings. They're mixing guys around. Like Jarquez McClellan was just a straight-up cornerback. Now he's playing some nickel. So you could have guys who were outside cover guys become inside and
Barry Odom talked, and this is what was good about this long lead up to the game, is they were able to install a lot of different packages and coverages and the rotations that go along with them. And if you have that kind of stuff down, you can confuse a quarterback for, you know, a couple, three series longer than, say, you normally would. You know, that's on the plus side, man. And they think they can rotate around these guys and have them play different positions and bring pressure from different spots. So there's a chance Arkansas defense could be better this year. And I think they will be better at least a little bit. It could be a substantial margin, but they gave up a ton of points and yards last year, so they needed to be better.
Tom Murphy with us here on the Morning Rush. Tom, one of the things that Tommy and I were discussing earlier is the kind of gamemanship that Kirby Smart's to be playing. Now, and we're referring to JT Daniels, the Georgia quarterback who has yet to be cleared after tearing his ACL in game one of the 2019 season when he was still a USC Trojan. Is that pretty inevitable that he's going to get cleared by Arkansas game one?
Well, I don't see how he wouldn't be. If he's out there practicing, I mean, it's been 1 year. Usually, you know, you can come back a little sooner than that in modern day ligament reconstruction. So, I don't know if it's gamemanship or what, but I feel fully certain that JT Daniel will be ready to go by the time the Bulldogs roll into here.
One of the other aspects that you kind of look at the Arkansas football team, there's a lot of new pieces and stuff, and an additional coach at this position group, Scott Found, heading up the special teams. That was an area that Sam Pittman was adamant, we need a coach here, we need to be really good here, and kind of overlooked in the 2010, 2011, 06 teams with how good the special teams were. Do you think, if you're a betting man, Tom, would you bet that there was going to be a game that Arkansas could possibly pull out by a special teams player too this season?
Well, I would certainly guess that there's a game that they could impact it in a positive way, say return a punt or return a kickoff. In fact, in my 10 Arkansas frequently asked questions that's running in our tab soon, I asked a question, or I pose it somehow, will Arkansas return a kickoff or punt for a touchdown? And I think the answer is going to be yes. Devion Warren has done it, did it as a freshman, 100-yarder against Auburn. And Treylon Burks, as we all know, almost broke one on multiple occasions last year. So I think they're going to do that. Yeah, a well-timed, you know, a blocked field goal here, a blocked punt there, you return for a touchdown. Huge impact on games. And Arkansas has not been a real impact-type team on special teams for several years now, and it looks to me like they're going to have a nice competition at kicker between Reed and Phillips, who both made 52-yarders, and they think the arrival of George Carrington, who had been a Michigan player, is, you know, really going to push Sam Loy and Reed Bauer, and that they're going to get more production from the punt game, because the last couple of years, their net punting and their punting average has just not been very good. And if you can shore up those positions and get yourself – two or three, you know, four hidden yards per game on those type of things, you never know what it can lead to. Yeah.
Tom Murphy with us here on the Morning Rush. This week we'll see the NFL return beginning on Thursday and full slate of games on Sunday. Also, Power 5 football is back as early as Thursday with Miami playing UAB, then Saturday kind of a heavy slate, or I guess under the circumstances of ACC and Big 12 teams, a lot of those non-conference games, some of those are conference matchups. Any game on that schedule? A, have you looked at the schedule? And B, any game that you're excited most to watch this coming weekend?
Well, I have not looked. I mean, I've seen some of them come across. Like, for instance, I know that Missouri State is playing at Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Now, how about that? You know, right. Bobby Petrino and his guys going over there, but isn't Arkansas State or somebody's playing Kansas State?
Arkansas State is at Kansas State. That's Saturday at 2:30. So
yeah. So I mean, last weekend was just kind of a little sampler platter of watching good football. This coming weekend, we're going to see a lot more. And you know, at heart, all of us who do this, we're college football fans. I was telling my daughters, you know, when it comes down to it, I just love college football.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I wanted it to be played this year. So I'm going to be watching Saturday, and I'm going to plug back in. It's not going to feel the same. We've already seen the reduced crowds, you know, how weird it is.
But it almost feels like, well, everywhere you go, you see people with masks on and stuff. So it's starting to feel like it's not that strange, these crowds that we see. So I don't know. I am fired up. I'm ready to see some Power Five football for sure.
Yeah, Clemson takes on Wake Forest. They're number one in the country. Number 14, Texas takes on UTEP. Both of those games, 33 and 43 point lines. Texas favored by 43. You mentioned Oklahoma, who's ranked fifth in the country, is playing. And then I think an interesting game, number 10 Notre Dame taking on Duke this weekend. That's to me an interesting game.
No doubt. And I'll tell you, I think these first Power Five games, as we mentioned a little bit earlier on this segment, I think we're going to see some teams that you're going to see them perform, and you're like, wow, I didn't think they'd be this sloppy, or, you know, with the pre-snap penalties and just not seeming to be on the same page, and you send your special teams unit out and there's only 10 guys. I think we're going to see a good bit of that this fall, just because it's been such a strange preparation time. And that's where you hope, if you're a Razorback fan, that all this prep that's gone in with Sam Pittman and his staff, that they're sound in all those areas. There was a lot to shore up, man, let's be honest, a lot to shore up with Arkansas football, and they may be on the right track, but we can't say they're there yet. So, you know, a lot of areas got to be picking up their production, and I mean, protection's got to be better. Quarterback, receiver, communication's got to be better. But if those things start to happen, you know, seeing a competent, well-run team on the field would be really nice.
Tom, appreciate the stuff as always, man. Good insight, and we will talk to you normal time, 7:15 on Thursday, man.
Sounds great, y'all. Have a good one.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.